Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus. We have three martinis for you today. Sorry to say that none of them are good. Let's start with the story that broke Friday evening and spilled into the weekend with other events as well. This is the CNN version of the story. Donald Trump's campaign on Friday postponed a rally in Chicago amid fights between supporters and demonstrators, protests in the streets, and concerns that the environment at the event was no longer safe. The announcement came amid large protests both inside and outside the event at the University of Illinois Chicago and follows heightened concerns about violence in general at the GOP frontrunners' rallies. Illinois holds its Republican primary on Tuesday. So that got canceled. It spilled into the streets. There were a couple of police officers who got hurt. And Jim, basically what you have now, of course, is you've got some people saying that, well, Trump's rhetoric has inflamed people. His telling his supporters to knock the hell out of people at the rallies has inflamed people. On the other hand, you've got these protesters deliberately going into this event and creating a combustible atmosphere. They're the ones who caused most of the problem with the police. Trump now blaming Bernie Sanders for all this. So what do we make of all this?
In a long and depressing campaign cycle, Greg, this is, you know, Friday night was may have really did reach a new low. First and foremost being that even if you despise Donald Trump, he and his supporters, if they book an arena, have a right to hold a rally there. And it seems like a good chunk of these hard leftist protesters, allegedly organized by MoveOn.org, quite a few Bernie Sanders fans amongst the crowd, and really looked like the old Occupy Wall Street crowd, maybe a smattering of Black Lives Matter. They went in there and basically their attitude was, no, we've decided that you're racist, we've decided that you're extremist, and thus we're not going to allow you to hold your event. And that's not how it works. If you want to boo, you go ahead and boo. You want to turn around, you want to protest, you want to hold up something, fine. But you cannot disrupt the event. And that very much was on the minds of these protesters. And then, of course, the Trump supporters turned around and having been told by their candidate that he'll cover the legal fees and he wishes he could punch them in the nose and things like that, that they responded in kind and escalated an already volatile situation. I assume you've heard, Greg, the really appalling cries. There's one supporter who's yelling, go to Auschwitz. Another one saying, go back to Africa. The very worst of America was on display Friday night, and you would think the country as a whole would recoil from that. But Greg, I'm not certain of that. I think there are some folks who look at that and say, yeah, you tell them, Donald, we're going to finally show these guys. And I think that the people who can't stand Donald Trump are going to say, all right, shouting is not enough. Now we have to use violence. And it's interesting. You saw Marco Rubio, you saw all the other candidates saying, look, Donald Trump, as wrong as it is to disrupt his rally, he's got to take some responsibility for the rhetoric and the tone and the atmosphere of his rallies. There's been no indication that has happened. He said he's looking into paying the legal fees of the guy who sucker punched a protester at one of his events. And it looks like we're only going to see more gasoline poured on the fire here. Nobody wants to back down. Nobody wants to calm down. Everybody seems to like what they're seeing in Chicago. This will not end until somebody dies. And the frightening thing is that nobody seems to be bothered by that. Or very few people. The people involved don't seem to be bothered by that, I should say.
Yeah. Then we had the situation in Ohio on the next day when the guy rushed the stage and Secret Service had to swarm. So, yeah, it's definitely getting more and more serious out there. On to the second bad martini. And this is another issue about violence potentially in the Trump campaign. And it goes back to the story we touched on in the crazy martini Thursday and Friday. And that's the allegation from Michelle Fields, who was working for Breitbart at the time, and that'll be the main point of this martini, that she was grabbed by a Trump campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, and yanked in a violent way where she almost hit the ground. She took pictures and had the bruises to show for it. Finally, there was some video of it from a couple different angles on Friday, but there's a lot of people in the way, so it's hard to see. You can see Lewandowski kind of reaching towards her, but you don't see like the horrified reaction that some people probably thought would have happened if it had been very violent. So whatever you think of Trump is kind of how you reacted to the video, it seems like. And based on the way that Breitbart.com responded to this, Michelle Fields on Sunday evening announcing she was resigning, saying, quote, I do not believe Breitbart News has adequately stood by me during the events of the past week. And because of that, I believe it is now best for us to part ways. Ben Shapiro, who a lot of conservatives know, had been for several years an editor at large there. He says Breitbart.com's handling of this means he is out as well. And he says Andrew's life mission has been betrayed. And under the chairmanship of Steve Bannon, Breitbart News has put a stake through the heart of Andrew's legacy. So obviously it's ugly when any sort of dispute from inside a company plays out in public, Jim. But it's interesting to see these very public resignations. And regardless of what anyone thinks of this particular story, Breitbart's legacy just 3 years after his death is not what any of us hoped it would be.
No, hold on. So let's make an observation here, Greg, that this is nothing to do with the man.
Right.
Andrew Breitbart is as great as he ever was. But this is all on the people who took over after he passed away. And you could probably put together a great publication or institution with all the people who have left Breitbart since Andrew Breitbart passed away and Steve Bannon took over. Folks like Dana Lash, folks like Larry O'Connor, all of the old crew, one by one, drifted away. And it in many cases, it was on very contentious terms, on the sense that the place was changing. And anybody who looks at the site and reads the coverage there can tell the place changed. It got less accurate. It got less focused on exposing the left. It got angrier. It got nastier. And it got much sloppier in its reporting. Whatever happened between Landowski and Fields, it's very strange that, you know, if this was a case of her, you know, of the guy grabbing her, why the Trump campaign couldn't simply apologize? Why, you know, if the guy, you know, heat of the moment did something stupid, well, then just say so. Where's this macho posturing of refusal to ever apologize? So then he says she's making it up. And then Trump says he's making it up. And apparently there was some order from on high in Breitbart land to say, no, we don't stand by our reporters. Stop tweeting about this. Stop expressing support for your colleague. That's a place of really twisted values right there. Because if you won't stand by your people, why should they stand by you? And it sounds like there was quite a bit of dissension in the ranks. A lot of Breitbart reporters did want to stand by Michelle Fields. The word is there's more coming down the pike, more resignations. Early this morning, Breitbart put up a just appalling, snotty, profane denunciation of Shapiro for resigning. It linked to his law license and put out his home address and his phone number.
Wow.
It's a bunch of screaming toddlers over there. This is not the way a professional journalism organization operates. Any second now, we just kind of wait for the Breitbart to rise from the grave and go after these people, because it's just an appalling twisting and perversion of what he stood for going on over there. And, you know, Breitbart himself way back when had been scoffed at Donald Trump. And he had basically said, Breitbart was never about loving one candidate. He didn't fall in love with Mitt Romney. He didn't fall in love with any of these candidates. He fell in love with the grassroots, the Tea Party movement of the people. Shapiro describes Breitbart as turning into the Trump Pravda. I feel like we're watching – it's like a zombie movie. We're watching something that looks like something we once loved walk around and do terrible things wearing its face. So maybe this exodus is kind of a sign of the place is coming apart. A big debate about whether it should continue or whether, you know, Andrew Breitbart's name will live on in greatness. Breitbart.com may not. And it's an interesting question is to see where the place goes from here and where the people involved go from here.
Yeah, what a mess. On to the final and crazy martini, Jim. After a disturbing martini like that, I think it's good to just go wholesome here and talk about the son of a mailman for a few minutes as we go to tomorrow being a critical day in the delegate hunt for Florida. All 99 delegates go to the winner. In Ohio, all 66 go to the winner of the polls. Just not looking good for anybody other than Donald Trump. He's way ahead in virtually every poll in Florida. In Ohio, it's a different story, though. A Fox poll had John Kasich up 5 in his home state. There's a new Quinnipiac poll out today showing it tied at 38%. And so Marco Rubio actually late last week told his supporters in Ohio to vote for Kasich. The Kasich campaign was immediately asked if they would say the same to their supporters in Florida since he has no chance to win there. And the campaign would not do that. And of course, in this populist era of this particular campaign season, where people are frustrated about immigration and trade and just American standing in the world and so forth, John Kasich's home stretch strategy is to roll out Mitt Romney today to the grassroots. He's got a fantastic new endorsement from John Boehner. And Jim, talk about having your finger on the pulse of the people.
We've seen a slight rise in the polls for John Kasich. He had a pretty good couple of primaries last week. And there was this perception that it was being driven by the perception that John Kasich is a nice guy. Now, you know, we've seen and we described in these earlier martinis what Donald Trump is doing to the conservative movement, what he's doing to the Republican Party. And, you know, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio love him or hate him, I think pretty highly of both of them, went out there and called out Donald Trump for what he was doing. And they made the case that he's not a conservative and he's lowering the tone and lowering the discourse and stirring up. You know, he did all these things. And what was, gee willikers, I'm not going to get involved in that. You know, John Kasich wasn't there when this argument needed to be made, and he was the one who benefited from it because the negative attacks hurt Marco Rubio. There's a case to be made that it hurt Ted Cruz, and John Kasich benefited by just standing there. Well, here we are. You know, here's Marco Rubio once again going the extra mile and basically making the case, look, I will, you know, it's more important to me to win Florida than for me to win Ohio. I will say this also, it's very important that we deny Donald Trump delegates. So let's do that. And of course, Kasich can't reciprocate. The entire nice guy is, it's an act. He's got as you know, combative and conniving and ruthless a soul as anybody else in politics. It's revealing by this. And it's also revealed when he starts saying that, you know, critics of his expansion of Medicaid need to read the Bible. You know, there's a nasty side to John Kasich. And I think we're seeing it in this, and it's a, There are certain moments of this race that have been kind of grimly satisfying, Greg. Watching Chris Christie have to stand on stage with that look in his eyes of realizing what he signed up for. Watching Ben Carson come out and endorse the man who called him a child molester. My suspicion is that at some point John Kasich will have some moment like that. The other thing which is intriguing is somebody, you know, during on Twitter this weekend, somebody said, look, even if you're thinking about voting for John Kasich, if Trump needs whatever amount of delegates Kasich's got, how likely do you think it is that John Kasich will turn him down in exchange for being his running mate or something? One of the Kasich spokesmen on Twitter said, nope, never going to happen. There's no way, zero chance of this. I said, look, after Christie and Carson, it's a little tough to hear somebody say, oh, I'm totally opposed to Donald Trump. I'm never signing on to this. There's no way in a million years that I never jump on the Trump bandwagon. And then a second Kasich spokesman came out and said, no, there's no way this will ever happen. So they're on record, Greg. They say they will never reach out and help out Donald Trump. I'd like to believe them, but based on experiences of the cycle, there's good reason to think that the ambitions of Republican presidential candidates will overcome their good judgment. Happy Monday, everybody.
Never trust a Buckeye fan. That's the my philosophy. Jim, there's so many wrong predictions in this campaign. Why is the prediction we made last Friday that there's no reason to think that this week would be any better coming true already?
We're ahead of the game. We're ahead of the curve. You know, again, you could say this as a forte-less Chicago Bears fan. I could say this as a New York Jets fan. Just bet on the bad scenario, and it's a way of covering your losses. And, you know, really bad things happen, but at least you win the money. So that's kind of the way we've been doing this. If you look for, and in a way, this is a longer comment for another conversation. If you are a depressed Jets fan, Or if you're a fan of a team, we've all seen games where everything that could go wrong for our team does.
Sure.
And you go in and like the only way we could lose that is if our quarterback throws three interceptions and all of a sudden our all-star cornerback can't cover anybody. And all of a sudden the line can't protect us. And all of a sudden we can't run the ball. And all of a sudden the special teams falls apart. And all of those things happen. And I'm totally not describing the last Jets game of the season this year at all. But it was one of those things, like the only way we lose is if like four or five things go wrong in sequence. And that's exactly what happens. And that's kind of what it feels like this cycle has been for Republicans. What are the odds of 17 candidates jumping? What are the odds of Donald Trump jumping in? What are the odds of Jeb Bush deciding the best way to do this is to spend all of his money trashing Marco Rubio? What are the odds that, you know, Chris Christie decides to go after Rubio in his last moment? What are the odds that everybody in the undercard debate like Bobby Jindal never gets a chance on the national? You know, each one of these things broke the way to bring us to this point. And, you know, look, there's going to be a lot of retribution, a lot of recrimination coming up in the year to come, I suspect, Greg.
Yeah.
So once again, happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.